Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
In a world full of straight people, aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race? And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
I'm Matt McConkie. I'm a writer, actor, and devoted fan of Sex and the City and Just Like That. And I've spent so much time and energy fervently defending the show that I couldn't help but wonder, should I do a podcast about this? The answer, of course, is no, but And Just Like Matt is more than a podcast. It's a faith-based community with a shared mission to bring back Samantha full-time. And it's also a call to action. It's a plea because I'm begging you, just like me. Come on, you know you want to. And maybe after you give this episode a listen, you will. Well, folks, we did it. We started with season two. We went back and got into season one. So in a way, our season one was season two and our season two is season one. And so now you're all wondering, well, what happens now? Do they just go away until season three? Do they go start talking about season two of The Morning Show for no reason? These are all great questions. And the answer is, the short answer is, we're not done here. Our work is not done. We will be back. There's a lot more to cover. So nobody panic. It's not over. But today, we have to cover the season one finale. That's what we're doing here. Episode is called Seeing the Light. And I'm seeing two lights right now before me on this Zoom. My first guest is a stylist to the stars and a star in her own right. You have heard her sizzling hot takes on Bitch Sesh. I've read even more scorching hot takes over our group text thread. Claire Mukherjee, welcome to the show.
Hi, Matt. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. What an absolute thrill.
Thank you for lounging
in a gorgeous bed and sipping your coffee.
English tea, I'll have you
know. Of course. Also, we are joined by our first ever returning champion. When she was last on this podcast, she famously demanded that And Just Like That should continue, not just for a few more seasons, but until all of our beloved characters drop dead on camera. And that, for me, was like the truest declaration of love I've never felt more seen or understood. TV writer and producer Nicole Shabtai, welcome back.
Oh, Matt. Wow. I'm going to cry. I can't believe I didn't know that I was the first returning guest. What an honor. What an absolute honor. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. And no pressure, you know.
No, of course not.
Want you to be comfortable. So let's you know, start as we always do and root ourselves in history. Listeners may recall that Nicole grew up in New York City. In high school, she would walk down Second Avenue in her mom's fur coat, smoking cigs in an effort to channel her inner Carrie. And am I remembering correctly that there were braces?
Or is that just a mouthful of braces.
And like braces with a cig.
Braces with a cig. And let's not forget, do you guys remember those two rubber bands that would like connect the top to the bottom? So let's just for clarity, add those two in to correct my jaw. So
okay, I had those too. Yeah. And my jaw is still wildly fucked
too.
Up. But did you take, I would take the rubber bands out to smoke a cigarette because I had them in college.
Yes. I think probably you're right. If I was smoking a cigarette, so I'll take them out, put them probably in my pocket, you know, and then light a Marlboro light while walking up and down Second Avenue in my mom's car.
Had to be a Marlboro light. I am British, so I didn't wear braces. I didn't get braces. And you can see if we compare our teeth, the three of us on this Zoom, it's obviously the Brit is.
Everybody would assume I'm the Brit for sure, but you have gorgeous teeth, Claire.
It was all about the Marlboro lights. And I think I get a lot of nostalgia for cigs when I watch Sex and the City. How old are you, Nicole?
I'm 30. I just turned 39.
Oh, okay, so we're kind of around the same. I feel like we're the Kate Moss generation of cool smokers.
Yeah.
The Kate Moss, the Carrie, we were, you know, 16, 17, 18. and we wanted to be Kate Moss or Carrie, and we were watching it there and then. We were seeing Kate Moss and Johnny Depp or whoever, and we smoked Marlboro Lights as part of our look.
It was so cool. I absolutely...
It was our identity.
Totally. I have taken now, if I'm out at a party, something that I like to do is, I haven't smoked a cigarette in about 13 years. I know that I can't even take a puff of a cigarette because I would smoke all of the cigarettes on the globe should I even take a drag. So sometimes I'll just hold one and like chat.
Lit or unlit?
Something about it.
Unlit. Unlit. And people are like, this is so weird. Just light it. And I'm like, I absolutely won't.
I'll smoke a real one, I will say. Like, I will say, Nicole, I was in Italy, I was in Florence.
Wow.
And I was without children and without a husband. And I was meeting a girlfriend there who doesn't have kids. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy a packet of cigarettes, the long, skinny kind. Because I'm 42 now and I'm in Italy and I had 2 cigarettes. I felt disgusting, but I just had to do it. I had to sit in the piazza smoking a long, skinny cigarette, a Vogue, or whatever they're called, the Italian version. And I went back to being 18, you know, admiring Carrie Bradshaw, admiring Kate Moss. And we are like, you know, the children of 1998, 1999
was
the thing. And I'm so grateful, just jumping straight into the show, that we still see a smoker in SEMA. Because I do not think, and just like that, would be the same if we didn't have a smoker. There has to be a smoker in there. Thank God for SEMA and her cigs.
Representation matters.
It really does. And actually, in the episode that we're talking about today, seeing her with her French lover in bed, you know, like rolling around holding a cig, it just makes me feel like I am having so much recollection.
Oh, God, Carrie, yeah.
You know, in bed smoking her cig after she's had the post-coital cig. I'm just like, thank you for giving us this.
I have like the muscle memory of making out with someone after we've been drinking a lot and both smoking, mm-hmm. and you're like, mm-hmm. I'm uninhibited by the like terrible breath I probably have because we both have it, and now we're exchanging it. It's truly disgusting, and I love smoking so much. Smoking, the show above all is a pro smoking endeavor. Wait, so Claire, were you obsessed with the original Sex and the City while it was airing? What's the relationship?
So yeah, I'm 42. So I lived and breathed it. I mean, Nicole, you were right in there. I was so bloody far away, you know, in North Yorkshire, in England, where I would have to drive at least or go on a train for at least an hour to even be near a Topshop or a Zara. So for me, it was just another planet of fashion and glamour and excitement. I'd never been to New York. I couldn't even dream of once setting foot in this hallowed land of glamour and cosmos. And and also because I'd always been interested in fashion. I think I must have been about, what year did it start airing, Matt?
I think 1998 or 99.
Okay, so if it was 98, I was 16 turning 17. And I'd already been obsessed with fashion. I always, at the first chance I would get, I would be on a train down to London, which was a good 3.5 hours. And I was always known as the girl in this like small market town in North Yorkshire who longed for something more and would get down to London whenever I could and reading, you know, all of the magazines from being like 9. So yeah, did really bloody heavily. And I just pored over everything that everybody wore. And then I also have very clear memories of university because it was really going real strong when I was at university. And all of the girls in our dorm, we had this shared flat. We shared it with boys as well. It was very, you know, it's very British. And we would chuck them all out every Friday because it was on Friday nights in England. And I just remember all of these girls, you know, we came from so many different backgrounds. We didn't have much in common, or we did, you know, it was a real mixed bag. Congregated on Friday, 9 o'clock, because it aired on Channel 4 at 9 o'clock on Friday. Watch Sex and the City. And a really significant part, I feel like, of my early adulthood, and defined like my fashion also it just had such a strong influence on me in terms of, you know, attitude and relationship towards sex, relationships and men, and seeing these women at a certain age, their life, they were the way they were living. I thought, wow, when I finish university, I could do that. I don't need to do this. What's expected? Or it was really a seminal kind of significant turning point in realizing how I could potentially live my adult life. Because I'm watching it at sort of 18, 19, 20, those university years where you're sort of really thinking about how am I going to live my life? And guess what? I graduated university and I moved to America. You know?
You put on your pink tutu and never looked back.
Pretty much. I remember like flying out to New York one summer. I was at university and I pretty much went by myself. And I remember trying to wear an outfit that I thought Carrie would wear. And I went to Magnolia Bakery and I just trekked around New York, Manhattan for like 6 days by myself.
Wow.
What if we probably like
passed each other, both of you in your Carrie Bradshaw cosplay. What for you, Claire, what was the, like, if you had to choose one, the greatest like fashion triumph of the original show and or the movies?
It's the Carrie nameplate necklace. It's the name necklace. I mean, if I think of anything, I think of a rose or a flower corsage, the Carrie necklace. And I feel like every single girl at Manchester University, when I was there, had a name necklace. We all loved a rosette or a flower. That's what I really truly think of when I think about like the one biggest takeaway from the sort of original series with Carrie is the necklace.
Yeah.
Do you not think?
Oh, absolutely. I want one of my own right now. Let's shift into the, well, not the present, but the more recent past. With our season one finale of It Just Like That. We start off with Carrie ending another date with this teacher, Peter. And at this point in like the rewatch, it now feels like we've given him so many chances. And I just don't know that you can ever really lose yourself in a kiss with someone that you've barfed on the street with. But Nicole, where do you feel about, you know, where we're finding Carrie at this moment in time?
You know, it was tough to revisit, I'll say. You know, I found it like, I was like, this was a sad moment, not in Carrie's life only, but in my life. It just like, I'm like, we are fine. We have like dropped in on like, on some sadness. And it's like, it's such a stark juxtaposition between the first season and the second season. And I hadn't even, I mean, I realized, but like in returning to it, really, it really made the second season feel so much more bright and fun and like the original series.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just like the, I couldn't remember when she was walking through the closet and she's like, I'm going on a date. You happy? And I'm like, is she talking to her shoes? Is she talking to Mr. Big's ashes? And obviously later we find out that she sure is.
Part of the reason I was so excited to talk about this episode is the lamp where Mr. Big is possibly communicating with Carrie, because really all I ever want to ask people is like, have you ever seen a ghost? Do you believe in ghosts? Where, so this is just an excuse to have that conversation. Nicole, I know you've got some juicy beliefs here. Talk to me about your supernatural experiences.
Oh gosh.
Okay. So I wouldn't say I believe in ghosts necessarily, like some of our friends do, but I do feel often that my ancestors or my grandmother or my great grandmother is reaching through the beyond and trying to like get me to do something. So it's not like as fun as like, you know, I hear footsteps in my attic or whatever. It's more just like I hear like my great grandmother, my Iraqi great grandmother, like flick me on the head and be like, you talk, do something.
You do?
I do. Not physically, but
okay.
You know, sometimes this is weird. I'm like, my daughter will have a dream and she'll come in the middle of the night to tell me about a dream or a nightmare or something that she's having. And I'll feel like, oh, that's my grandmother trying to get a message to me. And I'm like, thank you, message received. So it's stuff like that rather than blinking lights, or I'm like, maybe that's weirder. Maybe that's worse. I don't know.
Listen, it's all good as far as I'm concerned.
I think the blinking lights and a door slamming is weirder. Yeah.
You know, one of the many, many things I have in common with our Lord and Savior Oprah Winfrey is that I love bread. I do. I love it. It's my favorite thing. When they drop that basket on the table at a restaurant, I light up, I dive in, and then I go, oh no, don't have too many. What am I going to do? Because the carb fear can be very real. But luckily, Hero Bread is here with those same delicious favorites, but free of consequences or compromises, because they have remade carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. And right now, if you go to hero.co and use code LIKEMATT, you'll get 10% off your order. So whether your health goals are getting enough fiber or cutting down on sugar or adding more protein, or you want to find a way to make a delicious French toast or a breakfast sandwich that still fits in with those goals, it's all about the Hero Bread. So don't give up on being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your first order. Go to hero.co and use code LIKEMATT at checkout. That's LIKEMATT at hero.co. Because you can have your bread and eat it too. Folks, sunnier days are a-coming. Summer's right around the corner. We're all on our wellness journeys. And I can think of no better way to kickstart your new healthy routine than with Factor Meals. And right now, if you go to factormeals.com/likematt50 and use our code likematt50, you'll get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription's active. So with Factor Meals, there are 35 different meal options, more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, so you've always got new flavors to explore. You can make your day delicious from breakfast to dessert, everything in between. You'll stay fueled with easy, nutritious options. I'm talking filet mignon. I'm talking shrimp. I'm talking blackened salmon. And Factor Meals are ready in 2 minutes, so no shopping, no prepping, no cooking, no cleanup. Head to factormeals.com right now. Go to factormeals.com/likematt50 and use code likematt50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code likematt50 at factormeals.com/likematt50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Claire, where are you with your beliefs about the afterlife?
Well, I now don't have any parents. So I've thought about this a lot recently. This is probably a little bit more of a serious topic for me, but thinking about it kind of makes me want to cry. And I think actually it really hit me as well with the ashes, because I lost my mum in January of this year. And I'm not sure yet. And quite a few people have said, oh, I've got this psychic, or I've got this, you know, person who can speak to, you know, the deceased and whatnot. And I'm on the fence, you know. And I lost my dad at 9 years old, and I can't say I've had any stuff from him, but I do have a lot of dreams that he's still alive. My whole life I've had that. I've had, like, in the past, I remember I was about 18 and I had this strange thing where it'd always been a bit of a mystery about my dad. And this weird thing, I was at home alone and something said, go and look under your mum's bed, go and look under mum's bed, go, just go. I got this weird pull from somewhere to go and look under my mum's bed. And I went in and I found a bunch of newspaper cuttings that basically explains some mysteries surrounding my dad.
Oh, wow.
Some stuff that she'd kept hidden from me. This is all some real trauma shit, by the way. So, you know, I've thought about that a lot over the years. In terms of, like, yeah, I haven't gone there about my mum yet. Let's just say I declined the recommendations of the psychics, but I think it is something that I'm open to exploring. And actually one of the biggest regrets I have, mum was dying, was to not ask her. Oh God, this is a lot. So this episode was really intense for me, actually. Thinking about the lamp, I really regret that I didn't ask her how she would show me she's going to be there after she died. And you know how some people are like, oh, when I see a rainbow or a butterfly, I think of my mom or a feather. I wish so badly I'd said to her, mom, you know, what will be your little message or your little clue to me, because I had the chance to ask her and I just didn't. We were so like British, or she's so British, I knew I couldn't ask her and she would find it too difficult. So wow, that was long-winded. Feel free to cut some of that out.
Not at all. No, thank you for sharing. You know, I it's interesting. I just scattered my, this is going to sound explosive, I promise you it's not. I scattered my dad's ashes like a week ago. We didn't have a relationship, but I was home in Ohio and my mom and sister were like, you want to do this? I'm like, sure. Couldn't have felt less while doing it, which tells you everything you need to know about who he was and what that relationship was and was not. But I lost this close friend named Michael recently too. And he is someone that I'm like, please contact me. He was the funniest motherfucker who has ever lived, like a frustrated comedian who never found his, and like, so to know him was to like have this little secret that like, oh, I actually know the funniest person who has ever lived in this world. And so I'm like, please drop by, like send me a message, yeah, to reach out. And it's because I want to believe, I'm so open to all of this. And when it doesn't come through, it's disappointing. It's hard, you know? And I think that's, and I have been, I'm wary of psychics only because I'm scared of having that experience where it's like, oh, they didn't really know anything. Or, the, you know, like that's the thing that,
yeah,
I,
it's a very vulnerable, yeah, position to put yourself in. Yeah, it's something I think, especially if it's somebody very close to you, you really need to think long and hard about it. I will say that in the first 3 days after Mum did die, I did see like 7 rainbows. Okay, I did.
Okay.
It was really weird. Like I saw 7 and I was like, but this is too cliche. This is... Mm-hmm. And then my BFF, Henry, he lost his mum a year before and we had like a get together because he's in England. And we were talking about how we lost our mums almost the day and they were very similar. And he's like my children's godfather. And I said, yeah, do you ever think you hear from Julia? And he's like, well, do the rainbow. And I'm like, oh, rainbows. We're all on the rainbow. Mm-hmm. That's our thing. Maybe I'd be better off with a lamp. I don't know. Rainbows do seem to be one of the go-tos along with the feathers.
It's hard to deny rainbow, you know?
But I did. I saw 7 in 3 days. That seems like a lot.
That's a lot.
Actually have, it is.
Yeah.
It was like 3 days after she died. And I was doing a lot of driving back and forth to her house and to my children, like back and forth. And it was on these drives that I just constantly saw them. And I think I've seen like 2 since. Wow. But who knows? That's why the whole time when I was seeing them, I was like, God, I wish I'd asked her.
But what did it feel like when you were seeing them? Were you like, that's probably her and I can't even go there because it's so cliche?
A bit of that. Yeah, definitely, Nicole. But also, even on a more like sort of basic practical level, gosh, that's a lot of rainbows.
Yeah.
It's a lot of rainbows. It's hard to ignore that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? But yeah.
I think it sounds like you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. This episode though truly was very emotional one.
Oh yeah.
And it's funny coming back to it, revisiting it for this podcast. I think I forgot how emotional it is, but also I'm watching it now having lost my mum, right, as well. Mm. So I'm coming at it from a different, watching it from a different place.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. If you've ever listened to this podcast, you know I'm a huge fan of therapy. It's a big part of my life. Therapy is where I process a lot of the things that we talk about on this podcast. You know, stress about aging or career or navigating a breakup, whether it be romantic or an issue with friends. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Another reason I love therapy is that it helps me to recharge my social battery, especially as we're ramping up for summer. We're all going to be seeing a lot more friends and family. Some of us have, some introverted tendencies. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/likematt today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/likematt.
Yeah, and of course we've all lost Samantha to a certain degree. Yeah. But the texts with her in this episode, about feeling a presence, like her spirit's so alive in this episode.
Yes.
How was it for you, Nicole, revisiting the physical absence of Kim Cattrall in this one?
I gotta say, I think that the writers on the show do such an unbelievable job with those text message exchanges. And it also speaks to the strength of the character. You know, I think the character of Samantha is so strong that you can even hear her. She's not there, but the text messages say everything and it feels like she's there. And that is, I mean, we just must have her. We must have her back. I listened to the last episode that you did, and I thought that the pitch of even if she's just like in London doing her own storyline, I would be great with that, you know, and then calling on the phone, whatever.
Yeah.
Great. Let's bring her back. I just want to see Samantha. It's an iconic character that we are missing in the show.
Yeah. Big time.
100%.
It's interesting. I was thinking about the cameo at the end of season two, and that so much of the story was that and she brought Patricia Field back with her to dress her, and she looked great. I can't say I was blown away. She's wearing a gold dress, maybe. It wasn't the most memorable fashion moment. Claire, do you feel a significant, because Molly Rogers was the assistant costumer and then was promoted, and she's been with the series and the movies throughout, so there is a through line, but we do have the absence of Patricia Field. So how do you feel like the fashions are working in general?
Well, there's obviously a change, and I think and Danny Santiago as well, I think, was one of maybe Molly's assistant, because I've worked in wardrobe for years, so I know that actually the assistants do a lot of it. Have way more influence than you would expect, especially when the costume designer is somebody uber busy and established. They kind of honestly pass off most things, and they might come into the fitting and go, okay, yeah, no, no, no. But yeah, so I don't miss Patricia that much. Obviously, I think there's been a massive evolution with their styles. And I think that now as well, Molly and Danny have definitely created a specific look, especially for Miranda and Charlotte. I mean, Charlotte always had a very defined aesthetic, but I find that Carrie is a little bit floppy. Mm. Quite a lot of sweaters, cardigans, swishy, soft dresses. It's going a little more bohemian. Whereas I felt like before she had a little bit of boy in there, a little bit of sporty. She would wear a little old ringer tee. She would wear a baseball jersey, a short, whatever. But then you could also say, well, the longer hemlines, the softer the drapes, the layers, that comes with age. So I guess it's a little more realistic that she's not wearing a shorts with a bow or whatever. But the one person that has disappointed me is Carrie. Mm. Especially season one. I don't really need to see her in a floppy Forever 21 dress with a cardigan. I just don't. I feel like they really, really sorted it out for season two.
Yeah.
But of course I still enjoyed everything. My God, and I love Seema in her golds and her neutrals and her animal prints.
Yes.
She's just pure sex. She's feline. She's fierce. Miranda's in her jewel tones and her earth tones. And the one thing about our episode that we're talking about today, thank God we saw the return of the red hair. Thank God.
Yeah.
Because didn't you feel like in the same way that we were missing Samantha all season, we missed the Miranda we knew aesthetically as well.
Yeah.
It just felt off with her with white hair. And I get why they did it, because fuck, we all, I love the social commentary and announcement of it, that look, Miranda let herself go gray, because frankly, it's exhausting keeping up with covering our fucking gray.
And she would.
And she 100% would just let her hair go. But as, you know, viewers, I think it was alienating for us not to see Miranda looking how right. we knew her. So yeah, I was very happy to see her in this episode go back to being red. I don't miss Patricia. I don't care. I'm okay. I'm doing just fine with Molly and Danny. Thank you. To just sort of wrap up that question.
Can I just add something here? I think I was just making a connection tonally between the writing and the fashion. And I think that what happened, and I understand why it happened, but it's like, you know, this is the more accessible version of Sex mm-hmm. in the City. And they really tried to do something kind of interesting with that, where it's like, they are just like, you know, I think that everyone for the last 10 or 15 years has had a real fucking opinion about everything. And it's mm-hmm. like, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. I don't remember who maybe I was talking to Casey about this, where it's like Clueless would never have been made now, because everyone would be like, ew, she's fucking her brother, you know? And it's like, everyone has like, it's like everyone just has like a big old opinion now. Yeah, it's like, and I think that creators and even like costumers and everyone's like, oh, like sometimes it comes from a place of fear. Like, oh, we have to put this in, or we have to do this because like, we mm-hmm. don't want to get shit on, you know? So I mm-hmm. think like the Forever 21 of it all, yes. you know, is
they're like trying to be inclusive.
And I think there's something to be said for inclusivity, but I think that there's also something to be said for authenticity. And the show itself was authentic, and I think it returned more to that in season two.
Yeah,
because this is the thing, we don't watch And Just Like That and Sex and the City to feel like they're one of us. We watch it for escapism. We watch right. it. It's a bit like what we talk about with the Housewives. We don't want to look at some shitty house. We don't want to look at Gina's house. We don't want to look at something fabulous.
Yes,
we want to look at like people dripping in. Yeah, so escapism is what we all tune in for, and I think in this season, I didn't get to escape as much as I'd like in Carrie's closet. I mean, we had our moments, sure. trust me. But
oh, of course. She's always going to bring us something. What I do like about And Just Like That, Carrie, aesthetically, as opposed to Sex and the City, is that we are seeing that in her, you know, 50s and beyond, that Carrie is slowly evolving into an eccentric.
I love it.
She is a little bit of a, when she's in her 70s, she's going to be one of those, like those Instagram accounts where you stop. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm mm-hmm. like, that also feels very right.
That does feel very right. Yeah. I agree.
But do you see the slight hippiness direction we're going in? The bohemian
totally.
Thing? Like, it's strong. It's strong. I don't remember her laying a bunch of necklaces, and I don't remember her wearing a floppy cardigan over a long silky dress. We saw quite a lot of that this season. Or maybe a blazer over a long silky dress, but definitely it softened up.
Yeah.
Really. Well, it certainly did in season one. I feel like it turned a little in season two. But yeah, I felt a bohemia there that I hadn't before. Like, even a hint of Anthropology at times. Well, that's where I wasn't okay. Like, a little hint. She still delivered. I mean, please.
She's always gonna. So let's talk about the Vey Mitzvah. You know, I forgot how much I love this storyline and this like set piece as our finale, like with the trans rabbi and that conversation between Carrie and Miranda in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And of course, the fact that it becomes Charlotte's bat mitzvah in the end.
So good.
You know, nobody wants to hear me try to speak intelligently about world events, but like, we can't not acknowledge how bittersweet it is to be discussing this episode at this moment in time. Nicole, absolutely. How was it for you rewatching?
Honestly, it's so Charlotte, and I might cry, but it's like Charlotte's commitment to Judaism is like so beautiful to me. Like, it really is. I think like she, as a character, she so shines and has continued to shine throughout And Just Like That. And this particular one is really gorgeous, you know, when she was just like, I didn't come all this way, you know, to not have a Vey Mitzvah. Like, I did all of this. And like, just the hard cut to her up on the bima being like, Baruch Hu Et Adonai Amvora. You know, it was just like so beautiful. I loved it. It made me like, there are not, you know, my sister's fiance also yesterday did kind of like a mikvah, as like his dad is Jewish, but his mom was not fully Jewish. And he wanted to like become fully Jewish before getting married. And they did just like this beautiful ceremony. And it really moved me also. Where it's like in this time to choose us to be, yeah, to choose being Jewish feels so, it feels really, it means a lot. It means a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I know you're younger than me, so I don't think the timing would work out, but in my fantasy, your bat mitzvah, Nicole, was fully Sex and the City themed, and everybody has to come.
I will say my bat mitzvah was lit as fuck. My bat mitzvah was, it was, the theme was the NTV Awards, and wow. I had it when I was 12, and it was, did I already say this on this podcast?
No.
My bat mitzvah was the last party at the Palladium before they tore it down to make NYU dorms. Wow. So yeah, it was like, and like for some reason, like I understood like the history of the Palladium at the time. Like as a child, I like was obsessed with Studio 54 because my parents met there. And
wow. No, they did not. I'm obsessed with everything Studio 54.
Me too. Stop. I just okay. like love.
Can we be friends? I need to know about this. That's so cool. Yeah. Oh my god.
My parents used to like go there, and like, you know, my mom was like literally a child. She was like 17 years old, and like. Oh. You know,
was she hanging with Jody and Brooke?
I mean, she was like so cool, but also like so didn't know who she, and still doesn't know who anyone is. Like my mom like has sat next to Brad Pitt in 1994 on an airplane when he was on the cover of like the Sexiest Man Alive, like People magazine, and was just wow. like, you look so familiar. Do you know me? That's how my mom asked celebrities and she means it. Like she truly has no idea who anyone is and doesn't give a flying fuck.
Definition of shit.
That's right.
It, for me, from some, like looking at this, like, wow, from North Yorkshire, like my life and my parents, my childhood was so dull compared to, oh my god, your parents met at Studio 54 and your mom doesn't know who Brad Pitt is and thinks, do you know me? Obsessed. This is everything. I'd love to meet her. Like, she,
you would
like
love, you out. Would love my mom. She is like
can I borrow her
fashion? I mean, she is, wow. She is everything. But like, my mom is like, buy the best and take care of it and keep it forever and have it retailored as much as you need. And she's like, if it's wonderful and you love it, buy it in every color.
This is what I preach. This is what I preach to all of my clients and just in life in general. If you can afford it, brings you joy and it will last as well. Go for it. I'd rather you buy one Chanel bag.
That's it.
Rather than 100 Zaras or whatever, or Claire V's. Like, get the real thing, keep it for life, and pass it on, take care of it, right. Repair.
Everything I have is hers. Like, you know, like still to this day, like all of my like good shit, like I've never bought anything really because like she has, you know, given it. Just speaking about all this, it's, I just want to plug this idea that I have, and I'm sure Claire has it too. This rule that I live by is called price per wear.
It's all the rage right now on Instagram as well, isn't it?
That's God. Oh, the gospel is spreading. I love that. Yeah. I didn't
Please explain.
Price per wear.
Price per wear basically is like you buy something that is made really, really well and maybe is a little bit more expensive. Instead of buying like 4 Zara blazers, you buy one Theory blazer,
Stella McCartney
or, you know, the Row if you can, but who can? But the Real, the Real has some good Row pieces, guys. Get out there. But price per wear is basically like, by the time you wear it over and over and over again, for me, it becomes free. Mm. And
this is girl money.
Yeah.
Girl money, yeah, baby.
And that's another thing that's like popping up on Instagram about girl money. And it is all about price per wear of Like, it's free. By the time I've worn it like 30 times, it's free. After I spent $2,000 on this blazer. But yeah, absolutely. I say less is more, quality, not quantity.
Yes,
I say this
Claire.
To every client. And Casey gets so bored of me because I'm like, or did when we worked together, I was like, just get this and get it in a sensible color. But no, she wants the like Peter Pan polka dot, you know, orange and blue dress. but no, that's exactly how I work, Nicole, with everybody.
I love that, so Claire. You're all in on it.
Yeah, you've got to get that core closet. You've got to spend money on some core quality classics. And then you can throw in the whimsy each season. But let's just have this really solid base to start from. 100%. Anyway, public service announcement over.
Thank you for that. And thank you for what you're about to say, because I'd like to shift us into something even more explosive that we've talked about religion and death and everything else. And that is Che Diaz. Che, in this episode, you know, ushers Miranda into this public performance announcement that moving to LA to do a pilot and singing California Girls and all of it. And I love that when they bring Miranda in, is like, oh, I sat you with my grandmothers. Basically, like, here, go sit with your peers.
But they also all, like, I'm like, what were we supposed to think like of that? Were we supposed to say, oh, she thinks of her as a grandmother, you know, is it like setting up the joke of that, I guess.
It didn't occur to me until this time that it was like, well, she does generationally. She kind of belongs there. But
she has silver hair and they all have the silver hair as well. It didn't even occur to me. That's writers watching it. And I'm not a writer. But yeah, God, you're absolutely right. There was some subtext there.
Well, Claire, you are the rarest of creatures in that you are a Che Diaz fan, ? Is that fair to say?
Okay, so I wasn't in season one.
Okay.
Nicole is like a dog.
Nicole just the collapsed.
No, I wasn't in season one, and actually it was funny watching it back, because yeah, after season two, I have a softness for Che. I have a place for her in my heart. We have seen her go on quite the journey. We really have. So I am going to be popping to season two here, even though I know we're really talking about season one and this finale. But yeah, we see it be humbled, okay? And I think that to see someone in this episode with such a level of arrogance to the point that they're going to invite all the friends and family, get up on stage and sing a bloody song about the fact that she got a pilot. In the world we move in, big fucking deal. Everyone gets a pilot, okay? Everybody gets a pilot. But no, Che needs to get up on stage and make a big song and dance of it. So I think it's really interesting what Michael Patrick King and his team obviously did, in that we set her up so fucking high and then we brought her down. And I don't know if that's what they planned to do, but yeah, I really started to enjoy her in season two. Oh, sorry, her. Shit. They. It's real song.
No,
it's because
no
I'm
worries.
Thinking of Sarah Ramirez. I'm not thinking of Che, because I'm a big fan of Sarah as well, because that's why I'm thinking she. I'm terrible with pronouns. Please forgive me. I'm 42. That's no excuse. I'll do my best to keep it.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
But it is because I'm thinking of Sarah Ramirez as an actor and her performance. So watching Che's sort of downfall really brought me a lot of empathy for them. Let's just put it that way. And seeing their accepting of failure, and then seeing... And I also think that Sarah Ramirez is just an incredible actor. I really, really do. And I credit her a lot as well for my personal love for her.
Mm-hmm.
I just found her a very interesting multi-dimensional character, and I just really enjoyed seeing them realize that they had to go and get a job at a vet, you know, struggling with, you know, the wardrobe department's choices, seeing that they, you know, were not being the big dream that they had of being this big star, and it being about them, and actually wasn't happening, and they didn't really care about who they were, and it was somebody else's character being put onto them, and the fact that Tony Danza was going to be... I just thought it was really endearing.
Yeah.
Endearing. Yeah.
And I did too, especially really
felt for them.
when the wardrobe thing that you're mentioning, when they were, you know, working on the pilot in season two, and it came out that Che was just really like uncomfortable with like their body in some ways and not feeling great about the way they looked on camera, and like could not be more relatable.
Don't you think that that is, it was a really interesting thing to watch after she had been presented, especially with the season one finale, as being so pumped up, so full of themselves, you know, oh, I'm really doing badly with the pronouns, sorry. To then, yeah, a few episodes later in season two, their realization that this was not going to be what they thought it was, and needing some time for themselves, and I found her very endearing. Them very endearing.
Them. So Nicole, after season two, where do you think Che Diaz goes from here? Because some people speculating that the way it was wrapped up could be a end of the road moment.
Think so. I'm like, I do. I think that we've gone just as far as we possibly can with Che Diaz.
Yeah. You think Che would be a friend of, though? Because I do like that they're friends with Carrie and they have their little moment.
It's like at the vet. I think it's a different show. You know, I do. Mm. I think it's a different show. In this episode, what was so interesting to me and that I had totally forgotten about is that when Che is like, you know, I've really taken X, Y, and me as far as I possibly can. And I'm thinking to myself, like, Che, keep your podcast, you know, like it's like you're filming a pilot. Yeah. Like it's like, what are we doing here?
This is just bad planning.
Yeah, it was bad planning. And I also like that conversation. I think like tonally, like that conversation maybe in season two would have like had the reaction on the other side a bit differently. Like I think like they were all like, mm-hmm. Totally. This makes all the sense in the world that you would stop doing this podcast to go to LA. We could do it on Zoom, but we're not going to say that. Everyone's just
Why
nodding.
Do you think I have two podcasts? The pilots are going to come and go.
You know, I wish that we would have like turned camera and seen everyone just kind of like with their like more of a like a wide eyed face with a fake smile being like, totally. This is
smart choice.
Definitely the right choice, Che.
I enjoy the naivete though of Chase.
I get that. Okay. I get that. For, no, the Che of it, I understand. I just want to see like, you know, everyone else's reaction in a more real, I think that, you know, it was more just like, this is a character that we are like with 100%. And then what I loved in season two, and I thought was so interesting and devastating also in season two, was the focus group on Che Diaz, because basically like I was saying, you know, every person has a fucking opinion, you know, and like the think pieces on Che Diaz and the fan responses to Che Diaz, they were brutal and like beyond brutal. And they tried something, you know, the writers, I mean, like they really took a swing and they tried something. And I think that that focus group was like, this is what it felt like.
Yes.
When you destroyed Che Diaz, this is what it felt like to us. And I really felt that, you know, where it's like, oh, like we live in this fucking culture where everyone is just like, I don't even believe that people believe half of the things that they have like huge opinions on like one day, you know. I'm really finding that to be true recently.
Che definitely wrapped up that podcast prematurely, and then, you know, we're sort of planted the seed of Carrie's new podcast at the end of this that I loved, and they did away with that so quickly in season two. And now rewatching this, I was like, I could have used more of Carrie's Sex and the City podcast.
Definitely.
You know, Carrie's got the hot producer, Franklin, that she, of course, has her kiss with at the end. And he says to her, I think you're a podcast. And I know currently neither of you have your own podcast because you have dignity.
No,
stop.
I don't.
But I couldn't help but wonder, if you were to have your own podcast, Claire, would yours be about fashion or about Che?
I'd probably get a lot of listeners if I did a Che podcast, mainly just because everyone would want to come and hate on them. Yeah, I would be a gossipy fashion thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm a Bravo-holic, so yeah. It sounds like I would listen to you about fashion as well, though. You know what you're doing. Yeah, it would be like trash talk, basically. Yeah, 100%. Oh, I would just... God. Oh my God, that's my name, Trash Talk.
Love it.
Trash Talk with that gorgeous accent? Are you kidding me?
Trash Talk with Claire Mukherjee. Yeah, it would just be pop culture trash talk, 100%.
Nicole, yeah. What would your podcast be?
Oh, I would absolutely try all kinds of experimental dermatological things. Cool. Yes. Report back if I had to, or things like that. Like, I would absolutely just... For the people, try things, sure, and report back.
You would get them for free as well because they're bloody
expensive. And that's exactly why I would, yeah, do it, Claire. Yes.
Why you would do it, yeah. Yeah.
That's going to be the only reason.
Literally, Matt, I don't know about you, but if you're in your late 30s, early 40s, and you're a professional woman, 60% of the conversation, well, I think we'd say 80% of the conversation with other friends, other female friends, is about children. And then the rest is about injectables, lifting treatments, lasers, Fraxels, microdermabrasion. I mean, am I right, Nicole?
Yeah.
I talked about it constantly with friends.
It's wild.
What have we done?
The way that things jump around, it's like, you know, like in my group chats, like, okay, everyone, mental health check. How's everybody doing? And then, like, you know, yeah, I didn't get my kid into the twos program. I was late on that. And then also, have you ever done Ulthera? You know, it's, yeah, really like, mm-hmm,
I just did it. And my girlfriend, was it painful? Came over yesterday, as bad as everybody says. My girlfriend came over and I haven't seen her for 3 years because we moved back to England 3 years ago. I was like, Karen, you look fresher now than you did when I left. So tell me what you did. And she was like, okay, it's the retinoids. Okay. It's the retinol and it's the retinoids. She was like, but I have my waddle. So I put into my V lift. Okay. So it's like a mini lower neck facelift. I mean, we talked about it for a good 45 minutes. She had an eye lift a few years ago. She's nearly 50. She looks 38. I mean, we talk about it all. I have like three consultations set up for my tummy tuck. I had twins. I'm getting my double chin sucked out. I'm doing it in all. I'm going beyond, Nicole, the
you're my first guest, like, Claire.
Chop, 1,000%. I have a lot to talk about.
We need another hour just because I'm with you, my fascination with these. Not that I've ever dabbled in any such thing. But sorry, is all therapy it's like little shocks that's supposed to tighten?
Yeah, it's like ultrasound radio frequency.
Yes.
And I had the slightly more updated version that isn't as bad because technology has moved along a lot. So I have the same technology. I had Ultraforma 3, which is the same technology as Ultherapy, but they've, you know, it's because Ultherapy has been around for 10 years. They've managed to make it just as effective, but less painful. But yes, it is literally like being stabbed repeatedly, yeah, over your face and neck. I just had my lower face and jowls and double chin done. You have to wait 4 months in between. And I had my second one about 3 weeks ago. And
you're,
I see,
looking
a
gorgeous. You look
great.
Looking, you look great. Right and tight.
Inspiring.
I have a face like a melted candle. I see a body and face like a melted candle. Not. And it's kind of lifted everything up a little bit. But yeah, we also can talk about, I can talk for hours about the diet injections. I've done them all.
I know we have to get off this, but I have a straight male friend whose mom will periodically text him and say, if you get your chin fat sucked out, I'll pay for it. And then she'll just out of the blue text him a link to a couple different Beverly Hills surgeons that'll do it. And he's like, I think I look fine. And he does. And he's like only 40 years old. And I'm always like, please tell her I will do it. Like, if she just needs someone to get this done, like, I'm available.
By the way, you can do it awake now. You can do it wide awake. They just do a little bit of local anesthesia. Dr. Gabe in Beverly Hills.
Dr. Gabe.
Great.
Yeah, Jubin Gabe.
Okay. It's so good to get a name, you know?
Yeah.
I can send you a list.
I want the list.
You don't need it.
I do, and I want. I want it.
Don't. What a gorgeous and powerful note to leave this episode on.
Just the plastic surgeon.
Yeah, we do leave season one on a high note at the end of it all, and season two on a high note as well. I'm curious, Nicole, any predictions beyond, you know, perhaps the exit of Che Diaz for what season three holds in store?
I think season three is going to be fun. I think the tone is going to be comedy. I think there's going to be there's going to be camp. I think it's going to be a return to form. You know, there were so many awesome episodes, I think, in season two, especially, that I was like, this is the show, you know, when Carrie gets into like a bike accident with that guy, and then he has his own husband, you know, that felt so Sex and the City. Yeah. And
the pigeon purse. Yes. That was just everything. Sorry, just had to just.
Yes. No, it's, I think that, you know, ending the season, clinking glasses on a beach in Greece, even though, let's be honest, we were in Malibu. I mean, which is fine. I'm like, I think that's cool and it's fine. And I'm good with it. Like, I can like absolutely, you know, but I think it's like, let's go. It feels good. It feels good. Let's go.
Yeah.
I feel like they dealt with all of this stuff we needed to get through to now just let's party. Let it rip.
They broke it down to build it back up new and fresh. Mm-hmm. And and you know what? I give them all of the flowers that they deserve because they did it. And I have loved every second. And I will repeat that I hope that it does continue until each one of these beloved actresses, but also characters, but also actresses literally drop dead on camera playing these characters.
Yeah. And I will add that I would like to die at the exact same moment as them.
Yes.
That I'd like for that to be the last thing that I see.
Absolutely. Oh my God, 100%. I'm so, so grateful that we have this.
Yes.
I am so grateful. I could actually cry. It has just brought a much needed bit of sprinkle, glitter dust, escapism. I only ever watch it by myself. I like, the kids are in bed. I'm like, oh, I get to watch an episode tonight. I'm so excited. And it just gives you that little bit of like pizzazz in your life that we all just need. We need these people in our lives.
Yeah.
We need them all. And I'm grateful. I really am.
I am too. And I'm grateful to both of you for being here and sharing your light with us. Claire Mukherjee, Nicole Shabtai, thank you both so much. And
thank you, Matt.
Please come back very soon.
Oh, anytime.
I'd love to.
And Just Like Matt is a WOW Podcast production created and hosted by me, Matt McConkie. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. If you've got a burning question about a relationship or friendship problem, or really anything Sex and the City adjacent, just record a voice memo on your phone and email it to us at andjustlikematt@gmail.com, and I'll answer your question on the show with my very fancy guests.